I'm Charlene. In these 20-minute podcasts, I talk with memoir writers about their books, their lives, and their writing process. Sharing like this helps us all connect. As we listen, we learn about the world through the eyes of others. Their stories help us expand our views and empathize more deeply with each other. It's my pleasure now to invite you to listen in to this episode of Life Story on Soul Sciences. Hello, listeners. I'm here again with my dear friend, Melissa Birch, a woman who has traveled the world and been in war as her first memoir documents, My Journey Through War and Peace. She was a person, a videographer who went behind the lines, enemy lines in the Afghan War. So this is a woman of high adventure who later in her life got involved with a bus, big bus. She and her husband took the bus across America. And she gave lectures and talked to people and went to libraries and did book sales. And now she lives in Greece and she's a homeopath. And welcome to the show, Melissa. I could go on forever about you. So welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Charlene. It's such a delight to be here.
Please tell our listeners about the heroine's journey as you see it. What do you see for women?
So I think the heroine's journey, which I talked a lot about when I was on tour with the first memoir, My Journey Through War and Peace, I think it begins completely in an opposite stage in life than the hero's journey. It begins when we're at our rock bottom, when we're in crisis. And I think that is oftentimes when we as women are like, enough's enough, and we have to take some new direction, and we find the courage, and we take that big step. And for me, that's really the heroine's journey, is when we really just can't take it anymore, and we have to make some big change. And that's you know, what happened to me in my 20s, growing up with an alcoholic mother, was like, okay, I pushed the boundaries really far as a war journalist in Afghanistan. And then with motherhood, I think that also for many, many women, it's a big leap in life to become a mother. And that's also the heroine's journey as well for a lot of us.
The lack of information about how becoming a mother was also a kind of dying to the young girl who'd been free, the young woman who'd been, in my case, quite a gypsy. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I think that's also happened to me. It was really an opening to a whole new way of understanding my life, of a new direction. I had been a filmmaker, and when going through the infertility and the birth of my son, I discovered homeopathy, and that just shifted everything from being more of an artist type to a healer, and that opened up all kinds of discoveries around just what is life, and what does it mean to be healthy? And the book goes into all the adventures that started to take place as I started to discover, you know, that homeopathy not only works at a physical level and a mental and emotional level, it also opens up all kinds of spiritual levels as well.
I think homeopathy, yes, if I understand it, it is the least amount of the actual active substance is what has the power.
Exactly.
Right.
So it's considered placebo by Western medicine, which I still, and most homeopaths don't like homeopathy being called that, but I always embrace the idea of placebo. Who doesn't want a medicine that works, you know, 40 to 70% of the time and has no side effects? But then you have to ask, well, okay, what's working? What is happening that is the healing within? Like, what are those spontaneous remissions, right? That people are sharing, but how does that happen through a homeopathic remedy? What's going on there? And that's the mystery and the magic of that type of medicine.
I think it's an amazing course to take. I really think it is one of the best we have to offer. Finding a good homeopath who will give you the right remedy. And of course, it's like any other search for a good medical community. You have to find the ones that understand you personally, and it doesn't have any saying about the actual practitioner. It's just you need to shop around to find the one that you click with, because their read of your body is going to be more accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting during these times of the coronavirus. I mean, there were studies done during the last major pandemic of the 1918 Spanish flu, where, you know, it had the highest death rate of 30%. And within the studies of homeopathy, especially in Philadelphia, it had a 1% death rate. So there was an incredible success rate of homeopathy tested and documented extensively. So again, you know, this is, you know, people don't take it seriously because they don't understand it. But there's so many things we don't really understand. I mean, even gravity, we know it exists, we know how to use it, but what is it? Like, how does it actually work? You know, I think there are these mysteries, but we live with them and we know they work.
I think that's to the point, absolutely. I'm reading a book called An Elegant Defense, which is about our immune system. And it basically takes apart the tissue paper that surrounds our belief that we understand the immune system and says, well, actually, we don't. And it's a lot more alive, and it's a lot more pervasive, and it works somehow with the nervous system, and it's all connected to sense of self. So that takes us back to placebo and the idea that if you believe in a substance. But I also think that especially with homeopathic medicines, I keep seeing this gap in my head between a molecule and a molecule, and that somehow the homeopathy medicine goes into that gap and strikes something up, pushes some button or gets something going that then creates the proper immune system response. I don't know if that's of any use at all, but there it is. That's what I experienced.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think, again, I mean, the way Hahnemann, who was the founder of homeopathy, looked at it, it was based on an ancient idea of like cures like. So what you look for is that pattern of who you are individually, and you match that with a homeopathic remedy. So the idea is that your body actually is trying to do its best, that when it creates those symptoms, whether for the flu or for the chronic disease, whatever that is, that's your body doing the best. And the remedy pushes you more in that direction so that it actually can get stronger to take care of itself. So we have the opposite idea that symptoms are the way the body is trying to come back into balance. It just needs a little help in that direction. While, of course, in conventional medicine or allopathic medicine, the idea is you stop the symptoms right in its track, which in homeopathy we consider that suppression. And disease goes deeper and gets into much more dangerous territories sometimes. So there is a place for antibiotics and for trauma medicine. I mean, there's many, many places where medicine, allopathic medicine, works very well. But with chronic diseases and common acutes like the flu, it's really probably better to really work with your immune system, like you said, and find a way to support it so that it can heal without these much more stronger kind of medications that have all kinds of side effects and long-term difficulties.
Thank you. That makes it very clear. Now, I have a question for you. You mentioned something about the different personalities. So as a homeopath, would you prescribe a different remedy depending on the personality? Like if you had a really fiery temperament compared to somebody who's more slow and laid back, describe that a bit for us, please.
Yeah, so again, it's an individual prescription. So your personality or how you express yourself in the world would affect the prescription. And we're always looking for what's unique in you. So the fact that, you know, you have a fever with something isn't really as striking as the fact that, let's say, you know, you have a kind of itchy rash with that fever, and you have dreams of, you know, drowning, let's say. So we're looking at multiple levels of kind of uniqueness to find the remedy.
You mentioned dreams. Well, now you're in my backyard. That's what I do. I work with people's dreams at night. And I was really thrilled in this book, The Elegant Defense, to recognize they call the helper cells, the lymphatic cells, T cells, because they come from the thymus gland. Well, this is the throat chakra. And that's the chakra that deals with night dreams. And it's long been my understanding that somehow the night dreams are connecting to our bodies in ways that are profound, but that are mysterious. What would you say to that?
Yeah, and of course, Jung had a lot to say about dreams and how to work with them. And I think there are opportunities there. It's another form of listening to, you know, these blind spots we have. We think we really know ourselves, but oftentimes if we ask really close friends, they'll point out things that are just so obvious, but we're like, really?
Yeah. You know,
so sometimes the dreams, I think, work at that level. They bubble up to really share something that everybody knows, or really something you need to listen to. I think dreams are very, very powerful for healing and for really listening to what's the next step and how to move forward.
Now, the homeopathic, as you describe it, it occurs to me that one of the differences between homeopathic and allopathic medicine is allopathic medicine, the one we have in the West, where if you have a headache, you take an aspirin, is attempting, as you've said so beautifully, to suppress the symptoms. And that's kind of like, I have to be taken care of in a way that I understand to get out of pain. There seems to be, in the homeopathic way, a way of saying, my body knows what I need. I can let go. I can trust. I have to give in to something that is more naturally designed to help me get well. Is that a fair... Have I gone too far? I'm always wondering.
Yeah, I think it's done. But I also think that, you know, we talked about this, you know, before the recording about how, you know, we're so drawn in our culture to just keep working and taking on more and more and more. And sometimes these physical symptoms, I think migraines, a lot of time is the body saying, okay, enough is enough. Like, you need to stop. You know, so to try to take away, I mean, of course, nobody wants a migraine and they're horrible and they're extremely painful and, you know, nobody wants to suffer from that. But if you're really not listening to the body at this deeper level of, okay, what kind of stress are you putting it through, then, you know, you might have a susceptibility for migraines. And what I've seen oftentimes is that, you know, as a homeopath, is, you know, there are remedies that help with migraines, but it's also going to be asking you to take a big lifestyle change, you know, that it will require another level of recognition. And you may not be able to see that at all, or even be willing to examine that without a remedy or without something really opening up that other door and asking you to walk through it.
I think we've hit on another point regarding the healing process to do with, we don't have any understanding in our culture of when we have to die. I don't mean physically. I mean emotionally, spiritually, mentally, and yet how can we grow without dying to the old? And this is what I see over and over with my clients is, people are really interested in self-growth and self-development as long as they don't have to change. Change time. It's like, no, all your friends are going to change. Things are going to shift in your life that you can't even imagine. And you just have to know that it's part of what you've initiated by doing deep work.
Yeah, and it's beautiful work. And the possibilities become endless at that point. Like, you know, before you might have only seen there were two choices, but all of a sudden, something you couldn't even have considered starts to open up a new opportunity. I mean, it's
like you living in Tinos.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, I just think we make this, you know, and of course, it's an extraordinary experience to be on a Greek island. But it also, you know, we're far from my son, so it's sort of like this kind of recognition, too, of like, okay, you know, life has choices, too.
Absolutely. Now, the other thing that I think happens when people are on a real healing journey, and then I have another question for you, is that when they encounter someone who is a homeopath, there's a potential for a spiritual community. So that it makes opening that new door a little bit easier. Have you witnessed that in your work?
Well, I think that was what I was really trying to do with Yearning for Magic, was to talk about how these two were really dovetailed together. I mean, my spiritual journey and my healing journey as a healer and and my, and that's not actually typical in, you know, the homeopathic community. There tends to be actually the spiritual communities in one group, which doesn't have that many homeopaths. I was always a little bit shocked by that. So in my own life, they came very much together. I was always on a spiritual journey decades before becoming a homeopath. So I think I was, you know, I had been a meditator at least 10 or 15 years by the time I became a homeopath. But I think they do very much are intertwined. But it's not always true. And the healers are not necessarily on a spiritual journey. I think that's a kind of myth sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point. So someone who's looking for a good homeopath, if they also want a spiritual, somebody to be a companion with them or offer suggestions, they need to look for that in their homeopath. And so to know that they aren't all the same is really an important point. Melissa, how are you practicing your homeopathy?
Actually, I'm not practicing homeopathy right now. That's the thing. I mean, it's one of those life choices that I made. I ran a homeopathic school. I was, you know, very outspoken in the homeopathic community around advocacy and getting it legalized in the United States. And then I found myself really frustrated, to be honest, around all the kind of, you know, misinformation, the use of using allopathic medicine for everything from, you know, antidepressants and just so it became very frustrating actually over time. And I started writing, and so I kind of transitioned my life from being a homeopath healer into a writer and started writing memoirs, which this book, The Yearning for Magic, is a reflection on becoming a homeopath. I'm not a homeopath in the book yet. I mean, it's kind of leading to that stage in my life. And then I was a homeopath, I guess, almost 15 years. But yeah, I sometimes, with my other homeopathic friends, we share just the frustration of being in a world where that's not recognized, and it's very hard for people to understand what it is, and it costs money. I mean, it can add up for people to have to pay for a homeopath. So there was a lot of frustration around just the culture and being a homeopath.
I think we're in a time when I think what you've done is a really intelligent thing. You know, you've given what you could within a reasonable amount of time and energy, but you didn't sort of persist against that wall of frustration. I think that's where people get sick. I think what you've done is you've gone to a beautiful Greek island. I can't personally think of a better way to do it. And that whatever you're doing there, you're adding to the whole world community by your I believe this fully, by your meditations, by your learning how to make a garden, by your care and kindness to your neighbors. Obviously, that's very clear in your face that you're in a state of well-being. And sometimes that too is a contribution to the big picture. It's a systems theory way of looking at things. If you cut a blade of grass, you alter the very stars in their course, is one of the ways that people talk about it. So I think that's amazing. What are you writing now?
Oh my goodness. So I've been in the process of, you know, of writing still. I'm so attached to memoir. I mean, it's just, I mean, I think we share that, Charlene. I mean, just the level of, I love reading memoirs. Like, I loved reading yours and just the kind of levels of, well, the pain, but also how one walks, you know, through life to uncover the kind of gems. And I think, you know, this is just such rich resources and just powerful material that I didn't have. I mean, I loved Anais Nin. I mean, she was my role model as a 20-year-old, but that was it. I mean, there were so few that, you know, I mean, just because she just had written so many volumes, you could really get that sense. But now we just have that many more voices sharing these stories. And so I've been writing. I'm not sure. I've got like three tracks writing. I guess I'm in the messy stage of it, trying to figure out, you know, which one is going to kind of pull together.
Well, no. I mean, to your point about the power of memoir, we used to sit around the fire eons ago and tell our life stories. The men would talk about being brave in the hunt, and the women would sit there and giggle to each other and do their thing, whatever. I mean, that's my imagination, obviously. But in our time, we've lost faith, with good reason, in the church, in the government, in the colleges and universities, in the institutions. They're flatlining all around us. They're going to dust. And so where do we turn for the voices that can help us know that sometimes life is really difficult and that none of us really get around without hitting some of that difficulty? Where do we go for those voices? Well, we go to memoir. We go to listening to the men and women who've written it down and said, this is my story. And I'll tell you, through doing these podcasts, I have been just so grateful to know so many paths and so many people who have struggled with things that are just, to me, totally unimaginable and have come through it somehow and are still working to put their lives together. That's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in that power. How do we just pick it up the next day? How do you do it? How do you keep going? And memoir does give us those hints and those, it's like the voices from the elders that we can't get anywhere else, it seems. So I want you to write all three tracks that you're on now. All of them. Write all of them.
Really? Oh my goodness. Well, I think that's not easy, as anybody knows, trying to write a book. But I think that's one of the amazing things, is that anybody or everybody has a story and has an insight and has something to tell. And memoir just is one of the mechanisms or ways that's available to all of us.
That's right. Well, Melissa, it's been an absolute delight for me, and thank you so much. We look forward to getting everyone to read your book, Yearning for Magic, about your transition from an absolutely active, oriented person in the outer world to absolutely activated on the inner plane in Yearning for Magic, your beautiful memoir. And when you have the other one ready, would you come back and talk with us?
Of course. Oh, thank you, Charlene. It's such a great experience to talk with you and kind of dig into, you know, our lives at this level. Yeah.
Take care, my dear friend. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.